Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has interesting guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a fun show for all. Now here's Claudio.
Actually, it's just something to do so I don't have to be on the job. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning us in. Got to acknowledge the good old underwriter, the historic Carolina Theatre of Durham, underwriter sponsor of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theatre. Also want to mention that Mike Cross is going to be doing a jam over there on May 5th, one that I'm regrettably going to have to miss because, believe it or not, I've been asked to be MC for the Rockfest up in the mountains, Pilot Mountain area again, with Michael Bryan Spanauer, the world's new Jimi Hendrix, and the Donahoe Station Band. Last time we had about 10 bands. I think this time it might be closer to 15, and for some reason they want me back. It's a paying gig, so I'm going. But it means I have to miss my buddy Mike Cross. Also want to mention my art is hanging and available at Carolina Artists Colony. If anybody's interested in that, that's the number there is 919-776-3489. And on the website, I believe, is carolinaartistscolony.com. And that's the news on that. Got a real Annie Get Your Gun morning going on here today. Got Sherry Monahan in the studio once again, and we'll catch you up on who she was. Those who listened to my show early on may remember her being on before.
Who I was.
Not what I'm saying. Who she was back then, who she is now, what you're emerging into, who knows? Boy, I'm tripping over myself, and this is the right wench to do it around.
Them's fighting words where I come
from. Yes, is it? Well, where I come from, it's somewhat respectable, the sea. And speaking of that, you're working on a collaboration about Southport, North Carolina. Speaking of the sea, Cherry's also going to talk about genealogy as the show progresses. And at that point, we'll take in some calls if anyone has questions as to how to go about doing research for that sort of thing. Good morning.
Good morning. Sherry. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
My pleasure. I'm sorry I was so rude and just rambling on. Yeah, you're fine. Don't worry about what you hear in the website. What you hear in the headset is not necessarily what they hear out there.
Just want to make sure they can hear me. I don't want to yell at them, though.
We're explaining how the paddle wheeler works. I know when I first met you, you were indulging more in Western work. You were, mm-hmm. I know you write for True West magazine.
That's correct.
And you were coming. You come out with your own literature on the stuff as well as historical perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a scoop on your own background, where you're from. Let's go back into the West thing a little bit as we before we come in and connect with the genealogy and all that.
Okay,
jazz.
Great. I'm actually from. I was just telling you guys a little earlier. My dad was in the Air Force, so my parents were from upstate New York. My dad got transferred when he joined the Air Force to Illinois. So I was born in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and was there for a couple of years. Don't remember much other than a tornado and laying on the ground with my mother when I was a baby. And then they moved to New Jersey, southern New Jersey, so I like to say I'm a southerner,
mm-hmm.
And lived there for a long time, graduated high school, and moved to North Carolina about 21 years ago, and I've been here ever since. And I think my Western influence comes from my father, I like to say, because my dad never went anywhere west of Illinois. But he always wore cowboy boots, a cowboy hat, the giant belt buckle, the bolo necktie.
Had a friend that did that.
Yeah, he always had everything Western. He loved the Western swing music, and I think he obviously influenced me. I watched the show Dallas, and I was just amazed. I was going to move to Texas.
That's cooking for those guys behind the scenes.
Hey, very cool. So we have another connection.
Yeah.
And so that sort of influenced me, and I always just sort of had an affection for the West and got involved and went to Tombstone, Arizona one year. Back in the 90s, and just fell in love with the place. And on the plane ride home, I just said, you know, I want to be connected to this place somehow. And I love to cook,
mm-hmm.
and I love to write. And so I thought, well, what did they eat back, you know, in
that
in
was
the
a,
day?
A fascinating way of looking at
yeah.
it. And I can see how that might have
mm-hmm.
actually even inspired your genealogical
It did.
Journey.
I mean, over the years, it's amazing because when you do nonfiction, you have to do so much research, which I love to do. I almost like to do that a little bit more than I like to write because I find so many neat things. And I like to write about daily life back in the Victorian West,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, the historical fictions.
Fictions.
Historical figures.
Figures. Oh, I'm sorry.
Speak, it's too early.
Fictional facts and factual fictions. Try that one.
Come on, we're artists. We're not supposed to be up this early functioning.
Right.
But the historical figures. Man, I just leave that word
That's
alone.
That's okay. Maybe
historical
you got to slow down on the coffee next time, honey.
the historical people. They do come into the book, but that's not my main focus. I like to, you know, what kind of businesses did people run? What did they eat? Where did they sleep?
Right.
What kind of clothes did they wear? Those are the things I focus on. And when you do that kind of research, you end up going into people's genealogical pasts.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the years, I've really developed this niche for researching people that I don't even know. And so when I lost my job a couple of years ago and the economy started going down, as an author, most people think that you're very wealthy. Unless you have a bestseller,
If
you do it for the love of it, especially nonfiction,
yes.
You know, you can't make a living on it. You have to have a job. So I thought, you know what? I've been doing genealogical research for the last 15 years. Why not do this professionally for people and help them find their family?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of how the genealogy business evolved.
And this has actually developed since the last time I had you on my show.
Mm-hmm.
So give us the title just to give us a flashback. Boy.
It's catchy.
I hope the audience is on as buzzed as we are. Even though I think most of them are in coffee houses.
That's right. or speakeasies.
So yes, right.
Depending on what time
as we are here. Give us the title to the book you wrote then.
Which
for
one?
The first one. The first one.
The
when
first
I first
book.
Had you on.
My first book that came out was called Taste of Tombstone.
That's right.
And that has about 140 recipes in the back of the book. The front half is all the history of the hospitality industry, the hotels, mm-hmm. the bakeries, the restaurants.
It's a fascinating look at it, yeah.
Yeah, and I always like to say you can literally recreate history by tasting it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's menus in there from the old restaurants that were in town, so you really get a feel for what people ate. And believe it or not, it wasn't chuck wagon grub and Southwestern food like I would have imagined being in Arizona. It was classic French food, but it was the Victorian era, so people were eating French food, which was the trend of the time.
Mm-hmm. So. And I would also assume that people going into bars didn't order a glass of whiskey every time they walked up to the counter.
No, they didn't. My other book on Tombstone called Tombstone's Treasures, Silver Mines and Golden Saloons
mm-hmm.
is all about that. It talks about the games that they played. It wasn't a big old poker game. They played the game of faro, which was the top saloon game. And they didn't just belly up to the bar in the nicer towns like Tombstone, a very wealthy mining community. So when you went in, you know, you didn't just belly up to the bar and say, I want a shot of whiskey. You know, they were ordering drinks like champagne flips and claret sangaries and Tom and Jerry's. And they had, there were no tables in the front of the saloons, and they had the long white cloth so that men could wipe their mustaches, because long mustaches and little goatees were very popular in the 1880s.
Yeah.
And so I always, you know, tell people what you see in a Hollywood movie is not what the West was like in the saloons.
It usually isn't
and
what life is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that was a fascinating look at the whole era. And, you know, it was interesting in our conversation before the show started, since there are things that exist before mm-hmm. the switch goes on. We discussed how the taste of food actually gave you a lot of insight into the character of the individuals and what the passion that they had for food, and how that helped you in your genealogy.
That's
pursuits.
True. I recently gave a presentation to the genealogy system. A genealogical society, and it was on the food and how you could paint the picture of your ancestors by recipes and notes and letters and things about what they ate, because it can give you a clue into your heritage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you always believe that you were English and all of a sudden you've got a very Dutch recipe or a very Italian recipe that's been handed down through generations, you may start to think, well, maybe there's some Italian, or maybe there's some, you know, another portion of me that I didn't know about.
Well, if you were English, these things would actually be an improvement. So,
well, it yes. could be, depending. Hey, I'm from England. Be careful.
Hey, I like mutton as well.
No, we had English rice pudding, that's all.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's amazing that there were so many things when I gave the presentation that, you know, you look at these recipes. As I was telling you, when you do genealogy, you can look at a census and you can find a person's age and their name and how many children they had and maybe an occupation, mostly for men when you're going back, because most of the time back then, the women were housewives.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really have a job. So you really don't know a whole lot about those people other than statistical data. But if you are lucky enough to have a recipe that's handed down, or a recipe book that's been handed down through your family, you can paint a more personal person rather
than Sherlock Holmes perspective begins to shuffle in. Yes,
exactly. Like my grandmother, she loved molasses. So when I tell people that she was from England, she had four children. You know, she had gray hair when I knew her. She had jet black hair when she was younger. But she also liked molasses. That sort of gives you a different perspective as to who this woman mm-hmm. was, not just that
touch of character,
it
personality.
Does. It really
yeah.
does. And that's what I love about the food part of it. And I actually have a friend in England. I actually lives in Singapore now. He was a producer on one of my TV shows for the History Channel. And we're looking at doing sort of a reality program show about food and genealogy. Uh-huh. So I have to, we're working on a proposal now. So I think that would be really, really fun. So
good. Well, keep us tuned in about that. I want to draw attention to a book that you're collaborating on with an individual in Southport. And just before I go there, I want to tell the audience my little experience with Southport. A friend of myself, sea captain, decided to do a delivery run, took a boat from Beaufort to Hilton, a 37-foot sailboat, to Hilton Head. And we were told weather was going to be clear, so we hung out in Beaufort for the day and decided to start the sail at night. And within about 30, 45 minutes into the run, we were in the choppiest seas I'd ever been in my life. It was like a cork floating on Mother Ocean. Both of us were basically pulling in the sails. We decided to put her on motor and autopilot, but the trick was not to fall overboard, because if either one of us had fallen overboard, we couldn't have turned the boat around to go pick each other up without the boat capsizing. Mm-hmm. So finally that evening, or that night around midnight, we just realized there was nothing else we could do except leave that darn thing on autopilot. So we tied each other to our bunks, shook hands and said, "Mate, it's been good knowing you. Hope I'll see you in the morning," and dropped off to sleep. And the next morning, the seas were considerably calmer. But we decided that we wanted to get out of the ocean and took a left turn into Southport and did the intercoastal past those old cotton plantations and all that amazing history you get to watch and look at, and cranked up the soundtrack from Out of Africa as we turned into the inlet and just took it easy for the rest of the day and took the boat to Hilton Head. Mm-hmm. But talk about getting your butt kicked at sea.
Yeah.
Now, that's my intro to Southport. We'll take yours.
I have a book coming out in June with a co-author, a friend of mine, Sharon Smith, and her family has been there for several generations in Southport. And she had been a fan of mine, and I had worked with her at General Electric years ago. And she was talking about she maybe would like to write a book one day and maybe about Southport. And, you know, I said, well, that's really a great project. And I went to my publisher, Arcadia Publishing, mm-hmm. who had done the Carrie and the Apex book. And I said, would you be interested in Southport? And they said, oh, gosh, yes. We've been trying to get somebody to write the Southport book. You know, would you collaborate with her since she's a first-time author? And she said she refused to do it without me. So we collaborated, and it's been a really cool experience.
Let me pause for a moment. Both the Carrie and the Apex book that Sherry published are literally historical perspectives mm-hmm. on our local regions. So.
Yeah, photographic histories. There's a series that Arcadia does called Images of America, mm-hmm. and it's largely photographic with a series of captions that sort of describes what life is like, sort of a pictorial history, I like to call it. And that's what the Southport book will be, too. And there's some amazing photos in there, very cool history.
And you said she was from a black family, so she's from a side of history that we don't necessarily know a lot about. You told me they were shipping magnates and
that's one of the things that surprised me. Her family I forget how many generations back, a long time in Southport, and I did not realize that the black community in Southport was very influential. They were run businesses, they owned mercantile stores in town, they had their own fishing fleets. I was just really impressed that in the 1880s and 1870s that they were so much in the business community. It really surprised me, and it was really cool to learn all this.
No doubt, and definitely an interesting angle, because mm-hmm. it's certainly not one we're aware of to go that far back to realize that there was a black culture that was actually really thriving.
Yeah, they really were, and it's kind of cool because we have pictures in there of the white school and the black school, and then there is a letter that she has about the desegregation mm-hmm. of the school system.
Ah.
And it's very cool. There is a lot of great black history in there. There is one of the men who owned the store in town had a Coca-Cola sign from the 40s, and it was a black woman on there advertising. Huh. And it's just the greatest piece of history. And I'm very excited that I want to have, you know, to have this perspective in that book, because they were both part of the community, and to have all of the information and photographs and history from both sides is fantastic.
I think so too. Well, in order for Sherry and I to get a little decaffeinated at this point, we're going to go to having Rocco crank us a tune.
14 minutes now past 10 o'clock. Claudio Speakeasy, heard at 103.5 Community Radio, WCOM.
Thank you. You're tuned to 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Colorado. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Colorado. Thanks for listening to our station.
You're listening to the radio station that serves the area like no other, WCOM, Community Radio for Carrboro and Chapel Hill. You can hear us at 103.5 FM and online at our website, WCOMFM.org. Now back to Claudio.
And we are sitting here doing the music shuffle. I'm not sure the caffeine is worn off, but we'll try to temper it this time. I think we're going to go a little bit into Sherry's background with genealogy, since that seems to be a current fascination, and something tells me this may last a while. And Sherry did want me to mention that she's open to anyone that wants to call in just to ask her any questions as to how one might go about pursuing certain things or fill in the gaps there, Sherry.
Or if anybody has a specific question about, you know, where to go or what to look for or how to get started, you know, what's involved, even, you know, about hiring a genealogist, anything like that. And if anybody's got a question, yeah, call.
So we'll have the lines open for that for the next 20 minutes or so if anybody does want to ask. But in the meantime, I want to ask you, what got you into this mess?
Mess. Well, I just, like I said before, I love doing research. Mm-hmm. And it just fascinates
that
me.
That has to be the ultimate research.
It is. And the book that I'm working on that I'm finished, I'm trying to find a publisher for right now, is called To California and Back. And we talked about it last time I was on the program, mm-hmm. about a woman from England who came
yes.
to America and went to California. And they didn't do so well there, and eventually they all ended up returning to England over a series of time, some sooner than others.
Was it the cuisine?
Yeah, that was it. And so I ended up wanting to dig into her story, and she had printed or she had published 18 months worth of letters that she had sent home back to England in 1886. And those are used today, and that's sort of how I found her. And so we knew 18 months of her life, you know, what she did. Every day she wrote letters home. We knew what they ranched, what happened when she had her first child. But I didn't know anything about the person. Mm-hmm. I just knew about her letters. And so to write the book, I really wanted to dig into her past. Well, it turns out that in her book, because she was writing about current people, she didn't use any real names. And there was no last name until I found a source at the Library of Congress that mentioned the last name of the person from a sales catalog where the book was listed in 1929. So that was my first clue as to who the author was. But then I was looking for the name that she used in the book, which was Evelyn. And it turns out that Evelyn was an alias for her, and she was really Ethel. So it took a lot of detective work to figure out who she was. And I've literally been working on this probably 8-9 years now.
Now, have you communicated with any of that lineage, so to speak?
Well, the interesting part is the more I started to figure out who they were, the more I started digging, and the more genealogy I did. And, of course, it led me back to England because that's where she started. That's where she was born. That's where her husband was from and all the people in the book. So I went from England to California back to England, and I painted this large genealogy. I basically did a genealogy for this entire family. Mm-hmm. And I found a great-granddaughter who is still alive and living in England. And so 2 years ago, I went to England and I met her. She
Incredible.
Got me drunk on gin and tonics.
Ah, good for her.
She was a blast. And she, when I first contacted her through email, she said, "Yeah, it's quite interesting, you know." She says, "You a bit know more about my family than I do." And I said, "Oh, are you considering me a stalker?" And she says, "Well, that remains to be seen. I have to talk more about you."
Have you ever been pickled with a juniper berry?
Exactly. But she was a grand lady. We had so much fun. She shared a lot of great photos with me. She did not know anything about her great-grandmother's history and past. And so when
Incredible. So you literally came over to bring this history to her.
I really did. And
ouch.
Wow, they were surprised at some of the things I found. Did not know that Granny Berry had been married 3 times, and the last time at the age of 74.
Wow.
So you know, just a lot of, did not know that she was an actress on Broadway in the 1890s and early 1900s and traveled the acting circuit here in America. And so she's got...
I can see why she kept pouring. She didn't want you to leave the house.
Exactly. And then I found another great-granddaughter who is living in Montana. Wow. You know, one of the Evelyn or Ethel and her husband, her first husband, had three children. Mm-hmm. And two of those children, one of her sons died at age 9. The other one died at age 21 at the Battle of Somme in England during World War I at age 21. But he had had a son. And then her daughter was Jolette, and she was born. They were all born in Lake County, California, and she had a daughter. And so the great-granddaughter in England was from Jolette, who went back to England. And then the granddaughter, great-granddaughter in Montana was from the boy who was 21 that died in the war. And so when I reached out to Feather, is her the name she goes by.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's not her real name, but she goes by Feather in Montana. Her father was still alive. So Ethel's grandson was still alive.
Wow.
Unfortunately, by the time I got in touch with him, he was in like sixth stage dementia.
Ooh.
So he didn't remember a whole lot, but he had told her a lot of family history. So I was able to say, wow, this guy knew Granny Barry, this woman that I'm writing about.
So did you have a recording device with you for this?
No, I never got to go to Montana. It was mostly through email and a lot of phone calls. But it was just fascinating to know that, you know, and she was stunned too. She said, oh my gosh, I never knew so much. I never knew anything about my history because her grandfather died when he was 21 in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't, and her grandmother didn't know a lot about that side of her in-laws. So, you know, I was able to share history with these people. So
it's
very, very cool. So doing all of that research, I figured if I can research somebody else's genealogy, clear from England to California and back to England and all over this country, mm-hmm. I must be good at it. So
now let's cue the audience in on what this particular work is, and when you're going to, I know you've pretty much got it written, and it's lying in wait for publication, right?
I have it with a couple of different publishers who's looking at it right now. There's nothing, you know, definite, so I'm kind of hoping.
Do we have a title or a working title?
It's called To California and Back.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and the title is because a lot of people would go west to America to find their dream and make their fortune,
mm-hmm.
and they usually stayed. Whether they made it rich or not, they decided, okay, this is where we're going to be. We came to California or we came to Arizona, and this is where we're going to put down our roots. And pretty much they stayed.
Got tired and got planted.
These people didn't go home. You know, so it's kind of a cool thing that, okay, these people went, they tried it, they weren't happy, they failed. They spent over $100,000 in the 1880s, 1890s. Translate that would be today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're up in the millions. And so they went. They tucked-tailed and ran home, the first husband, because, of course, they got divorced, and a nasty divorce that made the New York Times in 1898. So I mean, this is just like a major saga of this whole book. So that's what the title is playing on the fact that, you know, these pioneers decided to come west to America, didn't make their money, and they went home.
So, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, as an interesting side note, I heard you say that this young fellow was killed in the Battle of the Somme
mm-hmm.
in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read that battle was possibly it was a battle that had the greatest number of casualties of any battle anywhere.
It was the deadliest of all. Mm-hmm.
And the Somme is a river in France, I believe.
Yes.
And
yes.
It was part of that trench warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And this fellow was caught up in that.
Yeah. By the way, I want to mention that the number here at WCOM, 103.5 FM, is 919-929-9601, in case anyone does want to inquire with Sherry. I just realized I forgot to give him a number, so nobody's calling.
You just thought they had ESP,
hey,
right?
Just, you know, everybody knows WCOM.
Naturally.
Why don't we go to another tune, and then we'll come back. And
more music, Claudio. Let me read this important message, and we'll go to more music.
All right.
WCOM needs your help. Keep your community radio station strong by donating what you can. In downtown Carrboro, you can make a cash donation in one of our marked containers at Cliff's Meat Market, Sid's Military Surplus Store, Southern Rail Restaurant, Anna's Alterations and Tailoring, and here at our WCOM studio at 208 East Main Street. Remember, WCOM is your voice in our community.
And you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy on WCOM 103.5 FM. That's my co-host Rocco, you just heard speaking, and I have the lovely, I keep calling her Annie Get Your Gun, Sherry Monahan, in the studio with me, and we'll pick up the conversation after the tune.
You know, there's only one WCOM, Community Radio for Carrboro and Chapel Hill, 103.5 on your radio dial.
Some voices are more powerful than others.
Ask not what your country can do for
one
you.
One small step for man, one giant leap.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
To your child, there is one voice that rises above all others, yours. Talking to your kids about the dangers of drugs will lower their chance of drug use by up to 50%. Get the help you need at drugfree.org. A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
And we're back, Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater. I want to mention that Mike Cross will be at the Carolina Theater on May 5th. And, of course, there's lots more going on between now and then. He just happens to be a good friend of mine, and I want to plug that. Also want to mention that the Rockfest, brought on by the Donna Station Band with Michael Bryan Spanhauer, the world's new Jimi Hendrix, is going to be in the Pilot Mountain area. I'll have more information on that next week. Come May 5th as well, which is going to cause me to miss Mike Cross. I'm going to have to make up for that. Still here in the studio with Sherry, and I think we've calmed down considerably. Don't know if we want to keep talking about these English perspectives or bounce back into genealogy on any level you like.
Whatever.
So anyone that wants to call in, again, I'll mention the number, 919-929-9601, if anyone wants to ask my lovely guest, Sherry, any questions about genealogy, not so much digging up their own, as what she might advise you in matters of pursuing the information you seek.
Yeah, or even questions about Tombstone or, you know,
right.
food from the Old West, whatever. Exactly. I'm open for anything.
Now, I definitely like the food angle and the whole personality element you brought up. Yep. So what else shall we go into as far as the genealogy goes? We've spoken about that. This is certainly a fascinating story, this English story that you've evolved. And you're saying it's pretty much a manuscript now waiting for publication.
Yep. It is. And I write for True West Magazine, and they're going to be doing a feature story on her. So,
right.
You know, try to get some exposure for it that way and sort of, you know, wet people's whistle with a little taste of what the story's about. The one thing, and I won't talk too much about this because I want to talk more on genealogy, but the one thing that is really kind of funny is that the people who went to Lake County had a very small community. It was called the Burns Valley community, and it was all English aristocrats. Hmm. Who went there to go ranching, and I say that in air quotes.
Interesting,
because,
yes.
They went with all of their proper saddlery and cricket-playing materials, and they had a cricket team, and that's what they did. They had a boat. They sailed on Clear Lake, and which is right near the town of Lower Lake, and it's a big lake right there. They would prefer to play cricket. They would have convivials, which were drinking parties, basically.
All right, gotcha.
The
cocktail hour.
Exactly. And so they were more known for their partying than they were for ranching. So go figure how they lost $100,000, right?
Yeah.
But it was just really kind of cool. So I think in the magazine article, I'm going to put one of the pictures of them, and they're playing cricket. Just so, you know, you just don't imagine playing cricket, and you think of ranching out west.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. But this is what these people did. So another thing to change the subject a little bit, genealogy. Pictures can also tell a lot about a person. I was going through some old books, photo albums, and I found a picture of my great-great-grandfather, and he's eating watermelon. And so, you know, when I write a story about my great-great-grandfather, I can say, you know, he was a newspaper man. He was the first to print in color in upstate New York, and he loved watermelon. You know, that's just such
yes.
a great little personal touch to this, you know, flat history.
I agree.
And so, you know, when people are doing genealogy, don't just look at the paper records. You know, look at letters. Read a letter if you're fortunate to have any letters that have come back or that have been in the family. There's little nuggets in there that can help paint a picture of what this person was, rather than just the statistical information.
Right, I agree. Yeah,
so
and any one of these
fun.
Nuggets can bounce you into all sorts of ideas.
And it also, you know, I say genealogy is addictive, just because I spend hours researching one small fact. Like I'll find a birth certificate or a birth record, and I always thought that the person was born in this particular place on this particular day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the day is different. well, why is the day different? Okay, now I've got to find, can I find a cemetery with a tombstone? Can I find a Social Security death index? You know, can I find something else or a family Bible record that shows what the date should be? Mm-hmm. And I will labor over that for hours just trying to figure out, I want to have the right date. And a tip for people, too, one thing that I've learned, I am a member of the two National Genealogical Societies, and there is a code of ethics which I follow, and every professional genealogist should. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that they tell you to do is that if you find one fact, that you should not assume that it's correct. You can't assume that it's correct until you can verify by two sources.
Ah, good point.
Because you really don't know in a lot of places who's putting the information out there.
Right.
If it's a census record, you're pretty sure that's good. But the census taker could have gotten it wrong. Your ancestor could have lied. Mm-hmm. So you can't assume just because it's an official government record that it's correct. Because I know for a fact that my great-grandmother on my mother's side lied about her age because she got pregnant when she was 15.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But later in life, now, and when she was a little girl in the census, it clearly shows how old she was. But later in life, when she registered for everything, she lied about her being that she was 17. So people that were doing, other relatives were doing research. Oh, no, you've got your great-grandmother's birth record wrong. I said, no, I don't. She lied. I know she lied.
Double checked on this.
So you can't assume that the census is right either. So that's why, they had this rule of, pretty much you have to verify by two sources, mm-hmm. which is really good to know.
Well, Sherry, that old saying, the truth is very elusive, is so true.
It really is when it comes to genealogy.
And on top of that, truth is stranger than fiction. That's very true as well. One of the reasons I write fictions is so I don't have to go to all this research trouble. I still delve into enough of it to have those characteristics about the story, mm-hmm. but I don't think I'd have the patience you have as far as really exploring some of this stuff.
Well, I'm working on a fictional story now, and my nonfiction background is making it hard for me because I'm so afraid to stuff up. I'm like, oh, but you can. No, you can't. Yes, you can. I'm having this little internal struggle with myself. I just let it go already.
And I'm afraid not to make stuff up. And on that note, shall we have a little more music?
More music.
What else we got? As a matter of fact, why don't you cue us in as to who you've been playing?
Well, yeah. We've had a variety of music this morning. We started out with Coleman Hawkins on the tenor saxophone.
Great sound, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then followed it up with Andre Previn on the piano, the great conductor of the Vienna Symphony and right. jazz artist back in the 50s and 60s. And along with him was the drummer Shelly Mann. This next piano player is someone you're familiar with, Claudio, talking about Vince Guaraldi.
Oh, yes. Peanuts.
And didn't you say earlier that George...
I've had the pleasure of stage managing George Winston, the pianist, twice, and he is definitely swept away by Vince Guaraldi because he has a good portion of Vince's music in practically every show, mm-hmm. along with his own original stuff.
Also, I'd like to mention, Claudio, that our listenership online has increased fivefold. And we have more listeners listening now than we've ever had with me sitting here with you.
Fantastic.
So we all Woo! Listeners online, we have to thank you because
appreciate you tuning us in.
They have to make that effort and tune in to WCOMFM.org.
Great
Back
point.
To more music now.
Glad you're there.
Vince Guaraldi. Support for WCOM comes from you, our listeners, underwriters, and volunteers, as well as our contributors. We are your voice in our community.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend. While many talk about these ideals without action, they are just empty words. If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education. thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
And this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater here in the studio with Sherry Monahan, author and then some, as well as my wonderful co-host, Rocco, who's cranking the tunes and giving us some input on anything we need to go on about. I want to mention that if anybody wants to get in touch with Sherry Monahan, her website is, or her email, is it website or email?
Website.
Email. Website. I'll get it straight. It's Sherry Monahan, as it sounds, .com, but I'll spell it out for you one time. SHERRYMONAHAN.com. So that'll spell it out. And if anybody's forgotten the show entirely, you can always go to my website and I'll explain it to you, Lucy, and that's ClaudioArts.com. Give them just a quick rundown on all of your publications that are available, and then we'll wind up with the latter part of it, the end of it.
Okay.
Eventually.
I already mentioned Taste of Tombstone.
Yes, you did.
I mentioned,
and it's not a pizza.
It's not a pizza. I mentioned Tombstone's Treasure, which is about the saloons and the silver mines. I have another book, which is my favorite. It's called The Wicked West.
Ooh,
and
nice.
The subtitle is Boozers, Cruisers, Gamblers, and More.
I haven't seen this one.
Oh, it's a really good book. And it's about all of the vices in the Old West.
My cup of tea, and you haven't poured it.
Drinking, gambling, prostitution. And if anybody has it or could see it in a bookstore, there's a page 100 is probably my favorite page. And it was some excerpts that I pulled from something called the Portland Sporting Guide in the 1890s. And the Sporting Guide is what visiting gentlemen could go to and look and see where they would like to choose to visit a young lady.
Hmm.
And basically there's prostitutes' poems.
Interesting. Oh, wonderful.
They're all poems written by prostitutes on how to come to their parlors. And there's one that says, you know, I forget it, at the end of it, it's like, but who could pass her parlors by, you know, with prying eyes. And it's just, you know, this, whoa, okay, fair many weights and silken ease. Like, wow, kind of racy from back in the 1890s.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, this makes me want to bring you in as a little co-host once in a while.
There you go. I can
we can actually get
home.
Naughty. Now you've proven that you can be.
I'm worthy.
Good.
Then another book that I did was called, it's in the Images of America series through Arcadia, and it's Pikes Peak.
Okay.
And that was in Pikes Peak, Colorado, Colorado Springs area. Very cool history there. I had my great aunt lived there. And my great uncle ran the print shop at the Broadmoor Hotel, which is a beautiful, beautiful hotel that was built in the early 1900s. And then, of course, I write for True West magazine, and I have a column called Frontier Fair.
You maintain with every issue, right?
Every issue.
Yeah,
and you can read that online. If you go to twmag.com, and then there's like the lifestyle right on the front page of the website. It's called Frontier Fair. I think it's called Eating Out West or something like that. And you could read it. There's a picture, and there's a recipe and history based on a particular food item. Like right now, my column that's due for July is about tomatoes.
Ah.
And I'll have a tomato recipe that will go with that. And then I'm a food stylist too, so I'll photograph the food and take a picture of it and set it all up so people can read that. And then of course I have the Apex book and the Carrie book,
and these are basically picturesque histories,
pictorial histories, correct. And then the Southport will be out in June, and then with any luck I call it my Evelyn book, but To California and Back, hopefully will be out within the next year. I'm working on another book that I'm going to to California for. It's called California Vines, Wines, and Pioneers. And it's a book from a historical perspective and a genealogical perspective on the men who went west, either for the gold rush or not for the gold rush, but went to California and ended up planting grapevines. Some clippings came from their native countries and ended up having some of the oldest wineries in California. And so the premise of the book is to tell their story, but you have to be able to be in the book. I wanted to include either vines that are still used today to produce wine or vineyards and wineries that are still in existence today so people can go and still taste those wines and visit those wineries.
So all the present-day winos and connoisseurs can go see what you started.
Why, certainly.
Telling us about the vines, how it all starts.
Oh, I'm so excited about that. I'm going to get to taste some great wine.
So when are you going exactly?
At the end of April. beginning of May.
How long are you staying?
4 days up in Napa and Sonoma, and then I'm going into San Francisco.
It'll take you another week or two to recover after that.
Of course. So don't ask me to come on and come back and give you. I won't be up that early.
I'm definitely going to bring you on to do some comedy co-hosting.
I can do that.
Good.
We've
got about 5 minutes, so anything you want to... you also want to mention the Southport thing that you're working on, the Southport book.
Southport book will be out in June.
What is the name of the author that you're collaborating with?
Her name is Sharon Claudette Smith.
Oh, okay.
And like I said, her family's been there for a number of generations, and so mm-hmm. it's very exciting. She knows so many people there, and I did not know if you know this or not, but Southport is the home to the official North Carolina July 4th celebration.
I didn't know that. How's that playing?
I have no idea. They started it years ago, and they draw, I don't want to mess up the number because I don't remember it off the top of my head, but thousands of people go to this celebration every year in Southport.
Interesting. Is it on the water, I would assume?
It is. It's the whole, right in downtown, the whole downtown area, and my friend said we were going to do a book signing, you know, to kind of launch it that weekend, but she said, make sure you stay at a B&B in town because there's only one main road that gets in, and she said her mother lives outside of town, and she will sit on her front porch and watch the cars at 7:30 in the morning backed up for miles for people trying to get into Southport. So I said, okay, I'll be looking for
a B&B.
If anybody knows of a place I can stay in downtown Southport, you just let me know.
And to do that, you can go to sherrymonahan.com.
.com.
Indeed. So at some point, we've got to plan on having you on again.
Yeah, because I figured, you know, the seafaring man that you are.
Yes,
you
yes.
To talk
as
about
a matter of fact,
the ocean.
We need to do a show. I need to dedicate a show to maritime, which is absolutely a passion of mine. And between the two of us, we could really bring up some interesting pointers, both the scandalous as well as the...
Absolutely. Actually, you could read some of your poems.
There's very little that's not scandalous about that lifestyle.
It would be a good show.
IMAD.
Yeah, so that's in the making. We'll do a spoken book together.
Ooh.
There we go.
That sounds like fun.
I've still got those couple of pages that I wrote in the Western we're going to collaborate on at some point, a Western short story or whatever it's going to turn out
to be.
I still think we should throw those pages at each other at some point.
Don't throw them too hard.
All right. But I'm really glad you joined us. And I think at this point, we're going to bring the show to a wrap, maybe with some music on the outgo. One more time from Rocco.
Always have good music, Claudio.
Absolutely.
Sherry, very nice meeting you.
Pleasure meeting you. And by the way, for all of you listening, does he not have a fantastic voice or what?
Yes, he does. He's got that radio sound.
He does.
Claudio, great show.
Thank you for joining us, Sherry.
Thank you
and
for
we'll
having
me. We'll do this
me.
Again.
Absolutely.
And you plan on me calling you to do some co-hosting.
Certainly.
And here we go. Thank you, folks, out there for joining us. This is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater, signing off with some music from Rocco. See you again next week. Cheers.